it's time in. Hi everyone, welcome to the Spooky Park Bench. My name's Mike Sim. I'm a commercial photographer in the United Kingdom. Over the Atlantic Ocean, I've got to stop singing these intros. Is my best friend in the entire world, Christopher Sturm. Say hi, Chris.
Hello.
Chris, I never call you Chris.
Because it's...
And over in the center of the creative universe, the Big Apple, is John Michel, the photographer director extraordinaire. Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
How are you doing? How's it going in New York? Doing? Yeah.
People get scared or intimidated by New York because of whatever they see on social media. But honestly, being in New York, it's fine. I think that because when you watch media, you want drama and you want just to see crazy things happen. So that's what you find on your social media. But in reality, New York is not as dangerous, let's say, compared to what you might see. So I just would say that I'm okay. I mean, the weather isn't as nice as like other parts of the world, but I can't complain. Today's a sunny day.
Oh, we just from got snow here, so.
are you from New York?
So people always get confused. You know how like when you say you're from the UK, it's just kind of, you just nod your head, but there's so many definitions of that.
Yeah.
For me, so I live in New Jersey.
Right.
But I live literally like a 15-minute drive or train ride to New York City. So it's just, for me, just kind of like meshes all together.
Yeah, that's kind of like when people ask me here, I'm like, oh, you're from California. Like, what part? Like, I could say Oakland, but people are just going to think San Francisco Bay Area. So I just say I'm from San Francisco area. And they're like, oh, cool. Because if I say Oakland, I'm not sure what that is.
At least you get that. Like, Scotland to the rest of the world is basically a village. Like, they don't think about it being an actual nation. Yeah. Like, especially in America, like, when I've been over there before and people ask me questions about Scotland, like, it's some sort of mythical land. And it's like, no. I mean, it kind of is. Men still, you know, men wear skirts and everyone's an alcoholic. That's Scotland.
Bleak. Well, Joan, we brought you here because a while ago, I was made aware by your work. Chris Visser, actually, I think, was the person who pointed your work out to me. Chris is a homie, great guy. He was also a producer on your doc, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And so I first saw your documentary, Caveman Built My Skateboard, and I was kind of blown away. First, because you decided to do it on 16mm, 8mm video. Like, you did everything 16mm. And 8mm. And then it just was, you know, when I was in high school and a kid, like, I'd watch skate videos and just be like, oh man, like, this is like the coolest thing ever. Like, this is what I want to do. Like, I want to be a skateboarder. And like, I haven't really watched any skate videos in a long time just because, like, you know, I got older, things changed and my priorities. But then I saw your doc and I was like, damn, this gives me that same feeling I had when I was like in high school. Like, I was like, damn, I want to go grab a deck and like go skate and just go to the skate park. That was cool. Like, it's really cool seeing that. And it's a really great piece of work. We just wanted to kind of talk to you about it. Like, what kind of brought you to the place? Like, what made you decide to start this project?
So just like every other person panicking during the pandemic, we all had our little new hobby, let's say. Mm. So for me, instead of making sourdough bread, I decided to take on skateboarding. And so I literally would just, I'm someone who, when I get into something, I get into this rabbit hole and just do all the research as much as possible. And so I went to the skate shop, literally bought a deck and a whole, like, my whole setup, and then would go to the skate park and then watch a ton of videos online, research different skateboarders, and just to get to know the culture. And then one day, the subject or the star of my documentary, Iggy, he was there one day and he was like, go out there and have fun. Like, you know, don't be so serious. Don't be so, like, you know, because I'm a female and it's also intimidating to be around a bunch of dudes. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, why is this 16-year-old kid talking to me? And so, but he's so nice, you know, he's sweet, sincere. And then as I would go to the skate park, I would always encounter him and see how he would interact with all the other kids. And I was like, wow, he really is just like a nice, kind-hearted, genuine kid. And that really struck me. So I kind of observed him for a while. And then at the same time, I had to figure out what would be my thesis for when I graduate college, because when to go back and finish my degree. And then I reached out to him. I was like, hey, like, what are your thoughts if you were my, like, you know, part of my project? And he was like, you know, no brainer, like, oh, this, that sounds cool. Like, sure. You know, like, not thinking how much effort and work we were going to put into this whole project. Mm-hmm. And so the crazy story that a lot of people who have supported and know about this project is that because he's a minor, I had to get a release form from his mom to be a part of the project. She did not want him to be in the project. Yeah, she was like super overprotective. And I understand, it's like you're in a pandemic and also you're like, why does this girl want to film my son? Like, I totally get that. And so we had to keep rewriting the consent form in order for her to, you know, feel comfortable. And pretty much the fine line was like, she had to approve it. If she didn't like it, no one would have seen the project.
Right.
So she got producer credits.
Did it change vastly from your original to because of her lack of consent?
What do you mean by that?
Can you elaborate? As in, like, your initial vision for it, did her interference, is such a better word, did that affect the end product that you had in mind? Did you have to sort of change your vision because of that?
Originally, as any person who comes up with a documentary, you think you would just follow them around, like going home or going to school or doing everyday life things. And for me, instead, because it was about skateboarding, there's a lot of mental that, in a sense of like, how can I explain this? When I meet skaters, this gets really deep. I feel like it's not just about skateboarding. I also resonate with this. I feel that it helps with my mental health. So I just feel that there could have been more that I could capture with Iggy. But because of his mom, we just kind of strictly stayed at the skate parks instead of documenting his whole entire life.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Yeah,
totally. I think that skateboarding is one of these things that it's a culture far beyond the act in itself. Like, it's so far reaching. And I think that it's got everything to do with whether it's community, whether it's the creative cultures or the artistic sort of endeavors that people often have as sidelines to skateboarding. Because it's a creative pursuit by itself. And like, some of the most creative people are in like New York. Like, Alexis Sablon, like, she's a creative like powerhouse. Not only is she an amazing skater, I think she's a qualified architect. She does all the illustrations for, I think it's Weekend. I can't remember who it is. But it's like, I rarely, if at all, know a skateboarder who doesn't have some sort of creative pursuit on the side, whether they're a musician, a photographer, an artist, or like whatever. Like, there's just always something else going on.
Well, some of my favorite photographers are skateboarders first. Totally. It's really funny how, because I was a skateboarder when I was in high school and I never thought I would end up doing anything close to photography. Like, back then, I didn't know the idea what I wanted to do, but I thought it'd be music or something. But like, everyone I knew back then who was skating with me is either a musician or some kind of artist, like a director or whatever. Like, everyone has gone off to do something like that. And it's like this really interesting, I think it has a lot to do with the community itself. And it also has a lot to do with like just the act itself. I feel it's a sport for sure, but it has this inherent creativity that like makes sense that these people kind of come out of that lifestyle, you know?
And I think what made the documentary great was the accessibility of it, because Iggy's like, he's your everyday skateboarder, you know? He's not some guy that's like ripping and totally makes the sport itself seem inaccessible. It's some guy that's just enjoying cruising around and jumping, like doing cavemans off a ledge. Like, that's what it's like for 99% of people. And as somebody that's just gone into it as well, I suppose, like, going to a skate park for the first time can be super, super intimidating. But generally, like, I feel like it's a really great environment and people are hyped on you doing anything. were you welcomed doing the documentary? Were people just cool with that?
At the skate park, I feel that I started getting known for documenting, always being that person that comes with a ton of cameras, and they're all just wanting to be able to hopefully be chosen to be in front of my lens. because it's not like, oh, she's just some girl who's trying to learn skateboarding. It's like, no, she like actually does this for a living, and she just happens to now be working on a project that has skateboarding involved. And so being at the skate park, it's literally all trust, right? Like, you're not going to just automatically accept somebody right off the bat, or maybe you're that nice, I don't know. However, for the people at the skate park, it's like you kind of gain their trust, the fact that you have no bad intentions, you're just there to, like you said, just, you know, have fun and just like literally skate. And then afterwards, it's just always not like, no issues or anything like that. So I felt accepted, and I've never even really ran into any female skaters, unfortunately.
Oh, really?
And it's always just me and the dudes and the guy. And they were like, they just became like my brothers, you know. I thought, you know, they would judge me for not being as adequate in skating, but they were more like, oh, like you could get better by doing this and stuff like that. Or I would, you know, maybe in a sense, like a kind of in exchange, I'd be like, oh, like, let me film you, you know, like I'd see them struggling, making clips for Instagram or whatever. And I'd just be like, hey, like, you want me to film you? Like, I'll actually, you know, do a better job.
So you kind of like made your way in just by being kind of like one of them, like just by helping out, being available, like, you know, that's funny, because that's kind of like the whole environment that I remember when I was skating. It's just like showing up and just being, wanting to be involved and wanting to be a part of it was a huge thing. Yeah.
Are you still skating now?
Well, the weather is not as nice as usual, but when I get to catch a nice day, then I'll be at the skate park. Yeah. I mean, don't worry. I don't do any crazy tricks before you ask anything like that.
No,
I'm
not.
I just cruise.
That's all I can do now. I'm too old to do anything else.
I haven't been on a deck in 5 years at least, so I can't. I mean, I don't think I can even heel flip anymore.
Last time I was at the skate park was a long time ago. Well, it was about, I don't know, 6-8 months ago or so, and I'd been in the bowl, and I was on my way out. And it's been in the bowl makes it sound like I was like shredding in the bowl. I was not. I was just like pumping around the bowl. Mm-hmm. And I was on my way out, and then there was like a little hip. And I went to just, as I was on my way out, just casually went to do a shove it over the top. And I landed on my too much weight on the back foot, and I flipped out, like went horizontal with the ground and landed straight in the middle of my back, like winded so badly. And the only other person in the whole skate park was this like 15-year-old girl who was just lacing up her shoes. Oh, and here's this 36-year-old man lying on his back just going like next to her. I looked so bad. It's like, oh, there's a reason I've stopped doing this. It just hurts so much more and takes forever to heal.
Dude, yeah, it's tough. You mentioned that you didn't realize at the time how much work you guys would be putting into the doc. How long did it take you to from starting the documentary, from like the first process to like ending it, and what was it like how much work was there? Like, did you underestimate certain parts of it, or was there stuff that kind of popped up you weren't really aware would happen? Or
November 2020 was when I approached Iggy about the project, and then we didn't start filming until March of 2021. And then it had to be done by May 2021. So it wasn't that long. Oh, wow. It was pretty quick. And just to finish the story about his mom, because it's a nice story to share. It happened that I finished the rough cut, and I emailed it to her the night before Mother's Day, and that wasn't planned. Mm-hmm. And I get an email, and I'm like, high anxiety, like, oh man, like she's about to watch this and she could just cancel this whole thing altogether. And she emails the following day, which is now Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. And then in all caps, it's like, this is the best thing I've ever seen of my son. Like, I didn't even know that he did this, you know? And she's like, I thought this project was about him and like a bunch of other kids. It's like, no, this is just him. And she goes on and on about just how great it was. And yeah, then that's when we got her approval. And like I said, like if it wasn't for her, then you would have probably never seen it.
Wow.
And so what the timeline, so after, so pretty much in March, that was when I was like, hey, Iggy, like we gotta like meet every weekend. Like, you know, obviously we're not going to film while it's raining or anything like that. And I didn't want to get in the way of his academics. That's like very important for me too. And so we're like, okay, cool. So some struggles that we had to go through would be like something, sometimes things would get in the way and we couldn't film. And then other times it would just be like, hey, I would pick him up and then we'd go to the skate park. And then he would just start skating. I would have like a lav and a microphone connected to him. So, mm-hmm. and then it's filming the audio while he's skating on my digital camera. And mm-hmm. then I'm filming on my Bolex and my Super 8, depending if I run out of film. And then, that'd be every weekend. Interchanging from the two skate parks that we have here in Jersey City. And it was cool because each skate park has different vibes. Like our local skate park that we usually, or where we met at, is called the Oaks, and it's just all flat ground. And they took out the ramps at the time. They just renovated. It's a whole different place now. But and then we have Berry Lane, which is what Tony Hawk Foundation we won a grant so we could get like a legit skate park. And so it took them like I think 5 years to finally make it, and then it finally finished during the pandemic out of all times. And so where he landed the caveman, which I didn't even know what the hell a caveman was, I just saw him just jumping off ramps and I'd just be like, are you okay? Like, please don't hurt yourself. And so there was no guarantee either that he was going to land a caveman, because at the time when I first met him, he never even landed one. So that was nerve wracking. And so at Berry Lane, that's when we captured him for the first time landing. And that was when like, we're like, yeah, everyone was screaming at the park because everyone was just like, why is this kid getting so much attention? Like, why is everyone looking at him? Why is everyone wanting to like be around him? Because they all want to be part of the project, you know, they wanted to be part of the film. And then, like you said, like, he's not a pro skater. He's not anyone famous. And that was always the biggest question. It was like, why did you choose him? And if you watch the film, then you get a glimpse of like, he's an awesome kid. Like, he's someone that he doesn't have to be anybody, like, you know, that's popular, but that's what makes it great. And that's like, what I've always looked for. Yeah.
I feel like it just, you could have picked, you know, because of the community, you could have kind of picked anyone and it would have been really great because, you know, there's so many great characters, but like, his positivity and his kind of like outlook, his specific personality, I feel like came through in a really cool way.
I actually noticed myself like smiling as I was watching it, which takes a lot because I don't smile at anything. So I was quite,
also too, like, a good job. He's 16, right? Is that what you said? He's 16?
Well, he turned 17 now, but yeah, he was 16 at the time. Yeah.
Right. I was just, you know, watching it and just being like, this is a 16-year-old talking. Like, that's kind of wild. Like, when I was 16, like, I don't think I had the awareness of self to be that kind of like thoughtful. And he's very thoughtful
until you listen to Hybrid Theory, and then it was
I listened to Linkin Park, and then I was
Park, and that just changed everything.
But it's just, I was just really impressed by like his thoughtfulness and like awareness of self. It was like very cool to see that as with such a young kid in skateboarding. It's really cool.
Also, it made me really want to go and shoot some Super 8 and stuff. And it's weird. I saw a Super 8 camera today when I was – I don't want to go back into my Great Olympus trip story because we could be here forever and people get too excited. But I saw one, and then I was like, if I filmed, and then I want to know, this is a tech question now, how easy is it digitizing this stuff?
I mean, I'm not doing it myself. I just pay somebody to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I know, but like, it's, like it's I don't, is it? So is it like, it just
Well, you
got
to take it
up.
To a special place to do it.
But did like photography labs just do it?
No. You have to take it to a special, I think.
So just to answer your question, in New York, we have two labs that focus on scanning, well, developing and scanning cinema film, let's say. It's not your regular photo lab that you drop off your 35 or 120 film. So because I studied, so I started with 16 millimeter to just get that out of the way. I studied that in school. I was very fortunate to be able to have a professor that still teaches that. And that's how I got to learn how to use the Bolex. And so when we had to, it's not required to digitize because we actually project our projects on an actual projector. But there was a part of me that's like, hey, I want to show this to, you know, everyone online. So like, how am I going to digitize it? And they don't do it at school. So then I research, and in New York, those labs that I go to, they have that option to digitize. So pretty much you just bring your film and it's up to you. You could have it emailed to you, but who wants to get an email of like 70 something gigs? I don't know. So I bring a hard drive, at least a terabyte. And then you just tell them, you fill out a sheet paper that just explains like, you know, what type of film it is and how many rolls and like what type of formats you want it to be when you get it in your hard drive. And then that's pretty much it. Then like, it depends on the lab and how fast the turnaround, but because, you know, New York has so many different like commercials and big projects, yeah. Like the turnaround is so fast. So my routine, if you want to know, I would literally would, like I said, we would film, let's say on a Saturday, like on a Sunday, if we're not filming, I'll already start heading to the city, or Monday morning head to the city and bring my film and my hard drive. And then I would literally get like a call back or email that would be like, oh, well, like your film is ready. And then I'll already start like inputting it in the timeline on Premiere. I color graded my own stuff. The lab gives you an HD quality all the time of your roll, I guess, because some people don't know how to color grade. And then they give you a flat log file. For me, I don't really care for the HD color grade that they do. I just use the flat log file, and then I'll color grade on DaVinci Resolve, and then I'll start trying to piece it together on Premiere. And so as we keep filming, it's just the same routine over and over. Film, go to the lab, start editing over and over and over.
Wow, so you were editing as you're shooting, like as the project is going, you're doing that stuff on the roll.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Is it expensive, cool. The film?
It's so expensive. That's why on YouTube, all these people who are like, oh my gosh, like, oh my God, why am I giving them a voice? you know, oh, I want to get into 16 mil. Like, how much is that? Is it expensive? It's like, yeah, I'm not going to sugarcoat that. It's so expensive. You have to have a budget. It's at least like one roll. I don't know how to compare to like pound or
go
ahead.
How long is one roll? Like in terms of minutes, how many minutes footage are you getting?
Oh, just like 3 minutes. Three minutes. And it's
dollars?
Just like, yeah, like a 3 minute roll is like at least like $80.
Jeez.
And that's only, let's say that's only like 2K file. Like that's when I'm and all my files are 4K, but I'm just saying, like, if you are just trying to not, you know, do the most. So I would always spend, roughly like maybe like 100 something for one roll.
How many rolls did I do? Because you did, okay, so you did Super 16 and 8, and so you shot a couple different formats. So you must have done, I mean, knowing what I know about the film industry, just on bigger shoots, like I know that must have been a lot, a couple of hundred
feet
of film, right?
It's funny because you're talking about the money side of it. Like, we didn't, because we were discussing the other week on the podcast about like the financial viability of people wanting to shoot certain formats of film or certain types of film and just how expensive it is. And it's like, it's an uptaking. Like, you get into photography and certain types of it because of its artistic sort of purest pursuit of certain things. But like, it's fucking expensive. Like, shooting, but like, people are like, oh, I want to shoot 4x5. It looks great. I'm like, yeah, it does. It costs a ton. Like, it costs a lot of money. Like, it's as simple as that. And I think that doing something like this, like, I was looking at it and I was like, oh, I really want to shoot some of that. And then I was like, what would I do with it though? Like, why would I be doing it? I would be doing it for the sake of doing it, which would just be a complete waste of money. Whereas for yours, it was a aesthetic pursuit that made sense to the film, I suppose.
But even if it wasn't for my project, I still shoot with my Bolex and my Super 8, which is, so hearing that right now sounds nuts.
But are they really like user friendly? Are they easy to use? Are they just like
the cameras?
Are they just point and go?
No, you have to know how to load your camera, know how to, you know what I mean?
Like, no, but once it's loaded, like once it's loaded, like, is there, I know nothing about these cameras at all. So like, I don't know if like how many settings you have to adjust or can adjust or anything, or whether you just point.
I guess it depends on the cameras. Cause you said you have a Bolex 16, right?
Yeah.
What's that? Which one is that? Or what's that camera like to use?
The back here.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
What is that like to use?
Real quick.
Okay.
Yeah, I need to be talked to like a moron with this, by the way. Like,
oh man, okay. That thing looks so cool. So what model is that?
Awesome.
So this is a Rex 1, but someone in Switzerland commented on YouTube saying it was a Rex 2 and they work for Bolex. So I'm like, and they're Whoa. Like, oh, you can always hit me up. I'm like, I get thanks, you know?
Wow.
So, this is heavy.
It looks like I need to explain how little I know, like nothing. So,
So for everyone who's listening to this podcast, you can't see it unless you're a part of my Patreon, but she's got the actual Bolex camera. It's a big honking thing. It's so cool looking. And it looks like it's in really good shape because I've seen people using the Bolex cameras and some of them are beat up, you know?
Yeah. I got like a steal. So, you know, when we got that stimmy money?
Yep, that stimmy.
Yeah, so I used my stimulus money on buying a Bolex.
Honestly, the best investment you could have made. That's the best.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
The U.S. got stimulus payments over the pandemic from the government. Yeah. They were not enough to pay for everyday services that we need to stay alive. But some of us were smart and invested it in something that would keep us going. And
what did you buy?
Me? I bought film.
Oh, nice. Good work.
Yeah.
That thing looks so sick.
Yeah. So, besides going to school and studying and being able to now be exposed to knowing how to use a Bolex, people like our directors, let's say like Steve, what am I talking about right now? Spike Jones, my bad. How can I forget that?
You had a photo of Greg Hunt as well. Do you know Greg?
We could talk about that in a bit.
I just popped it in my head. I was like, I love Greg.
Yeah, Greg is a homie now. But yeah. So with the Bolex here that I'm holding that you can't see but you might hear, ASMR. So this Bolex here, like I said, so there's a non-reflex and a reflex camera. A reflex camera is more expensive, but people who get excited, they watch a YouTube video and they're like, oh, let me go buy a Bolex. They get, let's say, gypped, or they get disappointed because they don't realize that a non-reflex, if you have a TLR, you understand twins lens reflex camera,
yeah.
The parallax. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So mm-hmm. Non-reflex, it's the other way around. So obviously when you're trying to make a movie, how are you going to get like the actors or whoever in front of their lens going the other way and you're trying to put that whole thing together? So a Rex camera is more expensive. So this is a Rex 1, as I was told, but then some guy on YouTube says Rex 2 now. Who knows? But it goes up. So if you have like a Rex 4, Rex 5, you could put like a 400 mil like mount for like a bigger roll, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
But for this is only 100 feet. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so I just took off the magazine. And So this is it. So if you know how to load this camera, then once it's loaded, it's like good to go, if that makes sense. But I'm not going to explain it right now. Just watch on my YouTube channel.
Right, exactly. So your choice to use a 16 mil camera and a Super 8 camera, was that because you're in school for that? It was because you're doing this mostly for your thesis, and then it kind of got bigger than that? Or how did you decide to come to doing it on 16 mil and 8 mil and Super 8?
Well, before I answer that, I just wanted to show Mike. So there's a handle here, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you just like crank the Bolex.
Yeah.
And then you just like fire like that. Instead of like pressing it by hand,
God,
it makes
it
easier
that.
For handheld. That makes sense. Okay, there you go.
You know, I'm such a knob. Like, I look at that, I'm like, I want that right now. Like, I want that in my life. I don't know what I'd use it for, but I want it. I just take loads and loads of selfies, 60 millimeter, just me in the mirror, just waving at myself. Yeah.
That would be great. Let's do that.
It would be great, yeah.
Worth the money.
We could do it for our impending road trip.
Oh, dude, we'll talk about that, yeah.
He's inspired.
Yeah,
I am.
He's inspired.
So to answer your question, I honestly chose to use this medium. I actually bought a Blackmagic Pocket Camera 6K. And I thought that was originally what I was going to use for this project. And then I was like, nah, it doesn't give me the look that I want. So then I just put that on the side and just decided instead to just use my Bolex and the Super 8 camera.
Mm-hmm. And it was aesthetic?
It was my choice. Yeah, for aesthetic. Mm. It wasn't like it was mandatory to use those cameras.
I see. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think – so is this something that you want to keep doing as far as shooting with film specifically? Did you come away from this process thinking like, oh, this was a pain in the ass, I'm not doing this again? Or are you just like, okay, now I know what I need to do. This is something I want to keep doing in the future.
For me, I want to continue shooting in analog, which sounds insane. When I work on set for other jobs and I camera assist, it's always usually – DPs who are cinematographers who choose to film still in analog. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty sick. I mean, for me, when I see digital, like I respect it. I'm not those people who are purists, but for me, as of right now, I'm just like on this grind of just using analog.
Mm-hmm. It's a different job for a different tool. I mean, it's a different tool for a different job, I suppose. And then, but where do you stand on a different job for a different tool? That sounds wrong. Where do you stand on in the same way that people digitize or edit their digital shots to look like film? What about digital to make it look like Super 8 or whatever else? I mean, obviously it's more convenient and it costs a lot less money, but mm-hmm. do you think that like is there a part of you that gets like frustrated by that and just thinks, you know,
like I mentioned, there's purists out there, people who really are film fanatics and will be very heartbroken if they know that you try to emulate film in digital. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's like, in the end of the day, it's if it's your project, it should be your choice and how you want to make it, and no one else should, you know, unless the producer or somebody is like hiring you, then that's a different story. So it's not really your whole input. But if it's just solely you, like for me, this is my project, and I didn't have anyone really to follow any requirements or guidelines besides making it like something that I personally wanted to do. And so for me, I've tried it. I'm not going to say I never try to put some film filter on any digital file, but it's not the same. You could easily tell. If I don't know, I'm a cinephile, I'll watch a ton of movies in the theater. I'll go out and watch it in 65 or 70 mil. And you could tell the difference from going to that kind of movie theater than going to some franchise one, when the quality is just totally different.
True. Did you take any inspiration from specific skate films or even films that weren't skate films? Like, was there anything you looked at and you were like, this is kind of like the direction I want to go in? Or was it kind of just like your own thing and you didn't Spike really like, think about other stuff other than Spike Jonze.
I was going to say, it's a good segue to Greg Hunt.
Let's talk about Greg.
Spike Jonze, Video Days.
Yeah.
That's like game changing. Are you going to get Greg's book? Because I've got it too.
Yeah, but I got a postcard, if that matters.
Yeah,
it's way better than me. Way better than mine.
Which book of Greg's are you talking about?
The one that just came out on Jason Lee's.
I have that one too.
Yeah, but, I just got that.
So for the people who aren't watching the video, Joan is now at her bookshelf in the back of the room.
Wait, I'm going to rummage
too. Rifling through things. They're rummaging through stuff.
I'm going to have a little rummage. Hold on.
Mike is also rummaging.
Let me go for a rummage.
Okay.
Where's Riveting Radio?
I have like a bookshelf filled with photo books and cinema books, but it's just crazy how many Thrasher freaking and skate photo books I have.
I've got loads of, I'm the same. In fact, I was in a skate shop today in London where I noticed I had almost all the books they had.
We get it, Mike. You go to London. We get it.
I was in London.
He was talking about, this is Greg Hunt's latest book, 20th Century Summer, yeah.
Sick.
Ta-da! Yeah, there you go. We're matching.
Wow, cool. Hey, guys, where's my book?
Yeah, loser.
So I spoke to Greg, like, I've known him of him for a long time. So anyone that doesn't know who Greg Hunt is, he's a former professional.
I can read words, okay? I don't need photo books. I read actual books.
Hey, there's some words in this as well, Dick. So Greg Hunt was a former professional skateboarder and then became the photographer and sort of director. I first spoke to him when I started doing up during my lockdown project was I started like a clothing company thing with 35mm film.
I was going to wear the on lock shirt because I saw it today in my closet, the long sleeve. I was going to wear it, but you sent me an extra large and it's so big on me. I look like a baby in it.
Yeah,
so.
Well, okay. I apologize.
It's funny.
Well, that's how I first spoke to Christopher too. But I sent Greg a t-shirt and I got speaking to him like through that. And he's a super, super nice guy and incredibly talented, incredibly hardworking from what I can see as well. So how did you reach out to him?
So like I said, when I get into something, I get into a rabbit hole. So I was watching a ton of skate videos during the pandemic. If I wasn't in class, I'd have some sort of video on and my classmates would come over and be like, "You're still watching skate videos?" I'm like, "Yeah, like that's just like my all time thing." So what happened was Greg Hunt did a video for Vans, Right Okay, with Elijah Burrell. And so this is the book I was talking about. So I saw on the Nine Club that they were giving away these books and I was like, so to give a little bit more context, the All Right Okay video, if you haven't watched it, go watch it after you listen to this. It's shot on 16.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, who made this video? Like, this is like awesome. Like, this is like the exact kind of skate video if I were to make one. This is the aesthetic and the music score. I love the whole album. So then when the Nine Club, it's like this skateboard podcast, YouTube mm-hmm. show. They're giving away these books and I was like, how am I going to get this book? I look at every skate shop. I called my local skate shop and they were like, "Oh, we just had a few copies. We ran out." And I would contact even in New York, like everywhere. And then I was like, I can't find this book anywhere. So then I reached out. I was like, let me find out who made this book. Who's the director? So I saw Greg Hunt. And then I DM'd him like cold email. That's like a Joan thing. Just letting you know, like every brand that I land, Kodak, Ilford, Cinestill, all these brands, cold email, it works. I messaged him. I said, "Hey, like I saw this book. I really, big fan of the video. How can I get a copy?" And he was like, "Oh, it should be at your local skate shop." I was like, "Believe me, I tried." Not happening. So then he was like, "What's your address? I'll send you a copy." And I was like, "No way." And I was like, "Dude, like how much?" And he was like, "Don't worry about it." And I was like,
"Whoa, okay.
You are the nicest person. You don't even know me. Like, I don't know." And my profile doesn't even have any skateboard related things. I was just like, "Wow, you're just a really nice person. So then I got the book. So this is the book, right? And then I get like this postcard of him signing it too. And this is like I think he sells these also, these prints. So I was just like fangirling hard. And I honestly think that's how he got on Analog Talk, because they were all like, who's this guy that you're like pointing out, Joan? And I was like, oh, it's Greg Hunt. Like, you guys should like have him on. And then that's when he got an interview. Small world. So this project, Caveman Built My Skateboard, happened, I was like, hey, like, just wanted to like follow up and like let you know I'm working on this project. And he was like, yeah, like, keep me updated, keep me posted. Him and Ray Barbie and a bunch of other skaters, like, literally, I like just DM'd them, like, and it was so funny because Ray Barbie was like, why do you care about my opinion on photo books? And I was like, I just want to know your thoughts. Like, I want to know what appeals to you. I want to know what you don't like. And he was just like, okay, like, you know, and because for me, I think it's very important as a director to know your audience. Like, you don't want to just cater to people who are like your same age. Like, I want to also cater to people who are younger, let's say like Iggy's age, and then people who are like the age of my mom, you know, like, because that's how I feel like you create a overall, like, an amazing project, when you, you know, gravitate and resonate with everyone and not just one demographic. So that's what I did. Like, after this, I mean, not when the project was over, but when the project was like in the rough cut stages, I would send private links. And that's when I would be like, hey, like, what are your thoughts about this video? And then that's when I would get feedback, re-edit. So it was like cool, because I got like different opinions like around the world. And then it's like, I kind of got an idea of like what worked and what didn't work. So fast forward. So when the book, we're not even there yet. When the video came out, I shared it with Greg, and then I told them, I was like, hey, I'm going to be in LA, in October. And I always miss Chris in LA. I never see him. Yeah. I was like, hey, I'm going to be in LA. And then, so he was like, yeah, like, let's like meet up. Like, you just caught me at a time when I'm not working on anything. I'm like, okay, cool. And so he treated me to breakfast, which is super sweet. And I was very nervous, you know, cause I was like, oh man, I finally get to meet someone that like I really admire. And if he's probably going to listen to this, if I share it, I'm like, oh God. And then it was, and then like, yeah, I, yeah, if you want. So then I had him look at my sample of my photo book. Like, no one else has seen it yet. And at that time, and then, so he was going through it, and then he showed me 20th Century Summer, and he was like, oh, like, look at this. So we were like kind of like doing our whole like book exchange, and it was just cool, because like I got to like hang out with him and just talk about skateboarding and my ideas and things like that, and him being a dad and stuff. So
yeah
it was my birthday was like a week ago, and we were talking on Instagram. It's just like crazy to think like this guy was just a person who directed a video I liked, and now he's just someone I just talk to like normal, you know.
I found that with this, yeah, especially with these old like skate community guys, the older dudes. Like, I've spoken to like a couple of guys that were like idols of mine. Like, I interviewed Tobin Yelland, who like was just like the skate photographer, and like I interviewed him. That was insane. And I can't remember who, but I've just spoken to people. Greg, I'd spoke to him on Instagram. Like, I've spoken to him quite a few times, and it's just like, it blows my mind literally because of what he's done, like the people he's known, and like, it's just nuts.
And it's just cool because I feel like they're just so open to be.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, Ray, I was so blown away that Ray was like down to do the podcast, and then down to come to this like SoCal photo meetup, down to let me photograph him, like just down to talk to me whenever I reached out. Like, he's just such a like. But that's just across the community. It feels like a lot of people are like that. They're just
the New York skate scene, I think, at times feels like sort of exclusively cool though, like with like Strobeck and Dill. Like, at times it feels a bit like I'm not cool enough to be like, you know, part of that crew. Do you know what I mean?
It's in your head, man. It's in your head.
I think that's all like because of the hype of like Supreme and things like that.
Yeah.
And Strobeck's got that weird style of filming now as well, where it's like, it's not so much
the long lens.
Yeah. But like, I think he shoots on film a lot of stuff, I think. Maybe.
I'm not as the same as Greg, I feel, though.
Yeah.
I feel like when I, not trying to choose sides, but when it comes to Greg's work, he has like a very like artistic conceptual sense. Mm. I feel like when I see Bill Strobeck's work, it's more like street, like edgier, totally. Urban, maybe because of New York. And especially if you skate in like Lower East Side, LES, it's even there is intimidating. Like you would expect like, oh yeah, it's a skate park. So of course people or tourists know about this place. So of course they want to like photograph, but people there are like me. Like they don't, they give you these like deep stares. Like, what are you doing? It's like as if like it should be like, you know, obvious, but it's not.
Either FA or hockey or maybe both. That their videos, they don't have any music.
I'm not sure.
It's one of them. And it's like, it's so weird because I just associate skate videos with a part with a song.
And well, there was one important video from, I don't remember which video it was, but I remember watching it in like college, and it was like the video itself, all the other sets had music, but there's one skater. I got to find out who it was and who filmed it, because it blew me away, but I can't remember who it was. But their whole set, like it had intro music, but then once he started skating, there's no music. It was just the sound of him skating, and it was like a 5-minute section. And I just remember it being like so. I just grabbed me so hard because like there wasn't anything underneath it. There was nothing like to distract
you. It's funny. Music choice is everything. It was just the sound of the deck. Your music choice for your video was amazing, by the way. Like I loved that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a whole story too. Funny story before I even explain who did the music. When I showed a different professor of mine my video, she watches it and she's like, oh, you know, this video is nice and all, but like you use copyrighted music, so like you can't post this or like you can't like distribute this video. And I was like, actually, this is like music I recorded in the studio with a band. And then she was like, oh, in that case, never mind. Like,
oh, really?
Whoa. Yeah. Okay. Tell us that story.
Well, that was that story. But the whole point of the whole how I got this band together. So shout outs to my friend Walter. I say he's my lucky charm because he was a big part of getting this band who lives, or they're from South Jersey. So it's pretty cool that everything's local. I think mm-hmm. that makes a big part of this project very, you know, it's just all put together in a sense. So the band, he knew one of the members through working in Starbucks of all places. And then he was like, oh, I told them about your project. And I mentioned that you're looking for, you know, a certain type of, you know, music for your film. And like, I think their music will work with your film. And I was like, oh, like, do they have like an account on Spotify or something or somewhere I could listen to their music? It's like, no, they don't have their music anywhere. So I was like, that's very like discouraging. Cool. So then I was like, he was like, oh, I'll pick you up. Like, we'll just go to their like band session. Like, okay, sure. So I bring all my audio equipment and then we go there, and then it's like me and a bunch of guys that I don't know, and they're like, hey, you know, and I was like, okay, like I'm here to record whatever you guys like, you know, are mm-hmm. willing to offer. So then we record like all the music that you hear for the project, and then my friend who mastered it, because I was like, oh, can you like clean this up, because this is like very like raw, you mm-hmm. know. And then that's what happened. So my friend mastered it, who is like a music producer or whatever. And then, yeah, that was pretty much it. It was kind of like I would just listen to the music and then figure out what clips worked with what. And then also going up, because Iggy's voiceover was like the last part. So for me, I didn't even know yet how I would have him talk and how that would fit in with the music. But yeah, after watching it now, it all looks like it makes sense, I hope. But yeah, for me, I wanted that like, when you watch like Z-Boys, like old school, like Super 8 skate videos, like that was like that, like having fun, no care in the world, I wanted that kind of vibe, and then the music I felt like worked with it. I didn't want some like hip hop, like too cool, like you said, like that's the whole East Coast vibe. Like that wasn't my approach. So
no, I'm it was just sort of like nice, yeah, like Americana, like West Coast style, like music to it. But it was definitely
it just
an
felt
East Coast
approachable.
Setting.
Yeah, it felt like it, the whole thing felt so like you could be there. Kind of like, and it made me kind of want to be there. Like I was like wanting to be at a skate at a skate park and wanting to be around that because I kind of felt like familiar, but also like approachable.
I should bring a set up in a couple of weeks, and we can go skating like old men around Wisconsin.
God, yeah, hopefully it's done snowing. But even if like you're gonna watch me break a wrist, dude, like I don't
That's
think
fine.
I got it in me anymore.
That's fine. I broke my impending professional skate career was ended by a foot break a couple of years ago.
Oh,
I mean, when I say impending professional career, I was shit, just to be clear. But like, I enjoyed doing it.
No, oh, yeah, I was a terrible skateboarder.
hey, John, do you drink coffee?
Yes, I'm a big
good.
Coffee lover.
Here we go. That's a flawless segue. I think you'll notice, director, into a little chat from our sponsors.
I'm drinking some Newground coffee
really?
Right now. Yeah,
which which
the
one?
Peaberry. I
it's
iced
good,
it
isn't
down.
It?
I made an iced coffee. I made it, so of course it's good because I'm good at making coffee. But
right.
This was probably the best iced coffee I've ever had.
Well, Joan, this podcast is, I don't know why I'm addressing you like a game show host. Well, Joan.
Maybe because you are.
Well, Joan.
A little bit.
I feel like I actually, yeah. This podcast is sponsored by Newground Coffee. It's a coffee roastery in Oxford in England, who are not only a wonderful coffee roastery, but they're a social enterprise who give opportunities to ex-offenders in the country. So there's offenders come from prison on day release, work within the industry, teach them how to work within coffee, whether it's roasting, whether it's production, whether it's making coffee itself, just to give them some skills for when they are eventually released from prison and given an opportunity outside of the walls that is often not given to them by this, can I just say by this government or just by society in general? Bit of both.
I think it's a societal thing, yeah.
It's a societal thing, definitely also mixed with this government. And that's a little, it's now a politics podcast. If you want to buy some of their wonderful coffee, we can ship it anywhere around the world, even to America. If you go to their website, newground.com, at checkout, put in spooky20, and you will receive 20% off your first order. And this
which is
damn good. Damn good coffee's on there right now.
It's damn good coffee.
Got some peaberry. What's the other one I sent you?
I don't remember. It's in the kitchen. I'm not going to go look at it.
It's
good. It's in there. It's really good. Both coffees. My girlfriend was like making someone else at work the other day, and she was like, this coffee's so goddamn good. And I was like, I know. That's why I'm glad.
It annoys you a little bit, doesn't it? It annoys you a little bit that it's good.
Yeah, because it's like, what are the odds that you went to work for a coffee roastery and it's like amazing? It's like kind of stupid.
I know. I mean, to be fair, I'm a 36-year-old hipster, so I have to work for a coffee roastery. It's very, very important.
True. I was going to ask, well, yeah, so go check out Newground for sure. But Joe, I was going to ask, do you have any new projects coming out soon? Do you have anything you're working on right now? Do you have any other things that you want people to be aware of?
There's always new projects, but I feel I'm one of those people who just kind of do those surprise drops.
Yeah.
Because I have so many NDAs that I signed that I can't share what I'm currently working on.
Okay, big money over here.
But all I can say is there's new stuff coming up with Lomography. Maybe, wink, wink, who knows. Maybe some new short films coming out. We'll see.
Hey,
everything
okay.
Sounds very up in the air. I'm actually going to Dubai in 2 days. So,
nice.
Yeah. Like I said, there's a lot of upcoming, but I can't really
can't talk about
much.
That one.
It's just funny because like another interview I was on, I couldn't talk about Cayman built my skateboard. This is like now like a continuation. Now I can finally talk about it.
Well, it sounds like you're busy. And
yeah,
that's good.
Awesome.
I want to see more stuff coming out of you. So that's good. That's good to hear.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, it's better to be busy than, I guess, stare at your ceiling.
So I've had a lot of that over the pandemic, so yeah.
Where's the best place for people to find you? YouTube?
Yeah, if you can find me on YouTube or on Instagram, my name is Joan Michelle, and yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, so we'll drop links to your YouTube and your Instagram in the description. We'll also post about it on our Instagram at Spooky Park Bench. So you can check out Joan's work. And you can go watch Caveman Built My Skateboard. There will be a link there as well. If you haven't seen it yet, where the hell have you been? It's on YouTube.
It'll cheer you up.
What?
It'll just cheer you up. It'll make your day better.
It'll make your day. Even if you're not a skateboarder, even if you're not into film, even if you're just an appreciator of anything that is created, it's in a wonderful short documentary. And I wish it was longer. It's great that it's this little bite-sized kind of doc, but I mean, like, I could have watched.
She doesn't have a £400,000 budget for film, though. So
right, you know. Too much
budget. One day.
Cool, but thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for coming to talk about Caveman Built My Skateboard, and yeah, this was great. I'd love to have you back on sometime.
Thank you, guys. Back from
Dubai. No worries. Speak to you soon. Speak to you soon, everyone. We'll speak to you soon. Toodle pip.
Toodle pip.